thought, well, no wonder you're doing, couldn't have been doing consulting work with dental teams. It's like just a family, just looking at dynamics and relationships and systems. And so that makes sense to me.
Welcome to the Inspiro Podcast, a podcast exploring personal growth, leadership, strategy, communication, and fulfillment. We are your hosts, Jason Luchterfeld and Bill Woodburn. I'm here as a dentist, transitioning into a career to help facilitate individuals and their organizations towards a more fulfilling future.
Hi there, I'm Bill Woodburn, and I'm a licensed professional counselor and licensed marriage and family therapist in Austin, Texas. I'm fascinated by the way people come together to solve problems, whether that's couples or families, dental practices or organizations. We're going to be exploring a lot of topics, and for us to be able to be free to do that, I have to let you know that this is not intended to be dental advice or counseling advice.
Thanks for joining us. Our second series with a guest. This time, Bill has invited licensed family therapist Kate Naylor from Texas. You'll get to hear a lot more about her, her passions, interests, and opinions on some things. So please join in. Enjoy. Yeah, so first, that's exactly where I was going, is I would like to hear who you are and what you do, where do you do it, kind of what your passion is in this field.
By trade, I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist. I started off my career teaching in the early childhood, kind of elementary arena, and felt so hamstrung by the personal issues that were going on with children and the family issues that were going on with children in the schools that I felt like I needed to take to move deeper into the systems that were there. And so went back to grad school for my master's in counseling and specializing in marriage and family therapy. Family therapy is more my passion. When I left grad school, so Bill and I know each other because he was my supervisor. He helped me finish my internship and complete my hours. And then we just hit it off professionally. We have a lot of overlapping interests and ways of seeing the world and ways of working with people and seeing people that we just stuck together. And I just keep learning from him and we learn together. And so when I started to counsel, I was working with a lot of adolescents and younger children. And when I could, I was working with their parents as well, but that was not always a straight line. And I found that being in an office every day, day in and day out, in a little small space and seated across from one another and talking about how things were going was just not going to work for me. It's not a good fit. And so I started to explore more, kind of outside the box ways of approaching mental health and counseling. And Bill was a really incredible mentor for that, actually, because I feel pretty confident that had I had a different supervisor, I would have been encouraged to stay in the model, the existing model. But you know, Bill, and we both have a touch of oppositionality in us. And so we were like, we don't have to do that. And so I started to explore getting clients outside, working in nature, working with animals, and those things started to become my specialty. And so as I grew as a professional, more and more, I just focused on working with children and parents outdoors, and most specifically in partnership with horses. And in doing so, found an organization that combines the science of human development and human attachment with just our basic understanding of equine science, and puts that together so that we can support people and horses in a healing process that happens kind of in parallel together. And I loved it because I grew up around horses. So I am born and raised Texan, have been here in Central Texas my whole life. I'm married, I have two kids, and horses have been a big part of my life forever. And it's funny when I travel and people find out I'm from Texas, they're like, oh, do you ride horses? Like, well, yes, I do. Not all Texans ride horses, but yes, I specifically do. But my evolution of my relationship with horses has changed a lot too. And so I started working with this organization, the Natural Lifemanship Institute, and through the years have found that actually the way that we teach people about human behavior and human relationships is one of the most comprehensive ways I have encountered in my mental health continuing education. So I have done a bunch of other trainings in interpersonal neurobiology and attachment and different modalities of working with people. And I keep coming back to this organization and the way that we talk about, the idea of home for me, like my relationship to the world around me, and then to the living beings that are in the world around me. That makes up a huge part of who I am. And so for me to support others in their mental health and wellness and their just development of self, to leave out that piece just wasn't working for me. And it felt like we were missing something. And so bringing in our very, an overused word, but our very natural relationship to nature and our very natural relationship to the other living beings that are around us has created a much more full understanding of relationships and behavior for me. So I'm raising young children. I have a 6-year-old and an 18-month-old, and I'm working just part-time. And right now I work for Natural Lifemanship. I write for them. I teach for them and speak publicly for them. And also I am in charge of our group of instructors. And so I help them develop as well. And another piece of this is also mentoring our students that come through and are learning how to work with horses in a mental health and wellness capacity. So I kind of have come full circle back to teaching, but I teach in the mental health field. And I find it to be a lot of mentoring. And I feel like a rookie when it comes to thinking about teams. But how does a team work? How do you support a team? How do you develop a team? But it is something that I find very exciting and interesting. And my family systems training, my training as the marriage and family therapist, I do think lends itself to understanding some things that go on in teams in that way. Here I am trying to take what I have learned as a professional and live it in my personal life as well, as a mother and a wife and a homemaker and a human being. And I find that I gravitate towards learning about the things that will help me live a little better life, not necessarily the things that, will get me through a session with a client. It feels bigger than me in that way. So I think that's one reason I like talking about it, and I presenting on these ideas, because to me it feels like this work being in the mental health field isn't just about helping people get from one day to the next. It's about a whole new way of being in the world that feels sustainable and engaged. Those are kind of two things that are really important to me right now, is how do I stay engaged and how do I do things that in a sustainable way for me.
And there's a terrific overlap because a lot of the work that Jason and I do with dental teams and with practice owners is also about that sustainability, that being able to have sustained engagement over a 20, 25-year career. A lot of people come to us and it's like, how do I help my teams sustain their engagement? With the idea that we're not big believers in like sheer loyalty that people have to prove. We much prefer the term engagement, that there needs to be something there for them that they want to engage with. But sometimes the problem when I show up at a practice is that there's some blocks to that engagement. That people want to. I seldom go to a practice where everybody hates everybody. It's mostly they want to be engaged, they want to be excellent, they want to engage with the patients, but there are these blocks in the way. And so sometimes we're just looking at why isn't the natural human thing happening here?
I do think a big piece of this work that I'm trying to do is helping people become more conscious of the fact that connection and relationship are our natural habitat, you know. And that's Lou Cozzolino, that's not me, but I believe it completely, and I do feel like that is sort of the thesis of my work in a lot of ways, is that helping people remember. And I feel like post-pandemic, this is a lesson we're needing to relearn quite a bit, and re-remember that we want to be in relationship, and we gravitate toward being in relationship when it feels safe enough, and when it feels like you said, like when blocks are removed.
You know, and I noticed also during the COVID times, everybody's horizons got really close and narrow. Even folks that were going back into dental offices trying to do things, there's some real heroic efforts going on to try to, you know, with air scrubbers and masks and trying to keep it going. But it was just keep it going for today, keep it going for this week. And I think there were a lot of sacrifices made that were almost unconscious. Because it was just getting to the next day, getting to the next week, getting to the next month. And nobody was thinking about how do I do this for the next 10 years.
So my first thought, Kate, when you were nearing the end of your introduction and experience was, an hour is not going to be nearly enough. So
I have words. Sorry.
No, it's not because you talk too much. It's because of the breadth of the topics and interest. And I'm over here furiously jotting notes about different topics I want to touch on, but I know we're not going to have time for all of those. So I hope this is enjoyable enough that you will come back at some point, because I know we're not going to get through everything. Next is a little bit more lighthearted question. And that is, why horses and not dogs or llamas or alpacas or something like that?
Yeah. So I think all animals are worthy of this sort of work. I know horses. That's particular to my history. I also love dogs, and I think dogs can do beautiful, beautiful therapeutic work. And I know people who are doing therapy work with alpacas, and pigs and chickens and everything. I believe there is an industry around mental health and horses for a few reasons. Horses, I think, okay, so on the like sort of more fantastical, magical end, is that horses hold something, I think, for our human spirit, that they just, there's a freedom and a wildness and a history, and there's just something about them. I mean, the only people I know that don't like horses are ones who have gotten hurt. You know, there's an allure to them, and they're intricately connected with human history. They have been alongside us for a very, very, very long time. They have helped build the modern human world, and yet somehow they still maintain a mystery and a freedom and a wildness that I think really calls to us as human beings, as very civilized human beings. You know, I think there's something when you look at a horse, especially a horse that is moving freely, there's a pull there that, like, I want to be like that. I want to feel that way. So I think that's in there. Horses are also herd animals and prey animals. And these two characteristics, being a herd animal, makes them very relatable to us. Their social acceptance and their social belonging is a survival for them. And it is for us too, but we have managed to kind of talk ourselves out of that a little bit, try to convince ourselves that that's not true. But when we slow down enough to really build a relationship with a horse, I think we are reminded of how valuable that is for us. And when we spend time with them, especially when they are in their own herd, we're reminded of that. The fact that they're a prey animal means that they are, for their own survival, they are constantly evaluating their environment, and they're using sensory information. So sounds and smells and movements and sights, patterns, they're using all of this sensory information. So below like verbal processing, they are constantly monitoring the environment. And so around us, that feels novel, right? That's surprising. they pick up on things that we don't pick up on because we kind of, the more we talk, the less we're listening with our bodies. And horses are always listening with their bodies. And so when we spend time with them, they can help us remember how to use all of our senses and how to remember how to listen with our full bodies. And they can teach us how to communicate in that way as well. And they are doing this for their survival. And and so there is also a lot of power in when you can bond. We are predators. And so or we have predatory capabilities, I should say. We're not always predators, but we have predatory capabilities. And so when we are able to find that level of communication between us and them that creates a bond, there's something just incredibly powerful about creating safety for a creature who most of the time shouldn't feel safe around us. And then they're also really big. And they can scare us and they can kind of bring up some anxiety. And so for therapy, it's very valuable to have that experience of just working through real life in the moment, fear and anxiety, so that you can have a connection that feels really good.
I was waiting for a Mr. Ed reference and I didn't get
No,
it. But
Mr. Air.
that's great. So thank you for that explanation.
Yeah.
Hey, thanks for listening to our first round with Kate Naylor. I should say the first episode from the first round with Kate Naylor. There's more to come in our next episode. As a slight tangent, if you want to dig in more about the intuitive and the ability of horses to sense various things from us, go on the Google machine and check out Clever Hans, CleverHans. It's the name of a horse. It comes up a lot in critical thinking circles, and it's a really interesting read. So check it out. And don't forget to check out our next episode of the Inspiro podcast, where we dig into some more concepts with guest Kate.